Greetings, Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Fish. And you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. We have a new guest host in the studio, magical studio in the sky today, and it is Vish, or as I like to call him, Der Vischerman. I just made that up right now. That's your wrestling name.
Be very afraid.
Be very afraid. He will mess you up. before we talk to Vish and find out about him and sort of what he's doing on the show and sort of our history together, you can get us at fatguysatthemovies.com, our website, and check us out, subscribe to our podcast, or you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. Just go to iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies or Fat Guys Network. You get all of our podcasts. You get the Idiot Boxers and Celluloid Spotlight, plus all the movie reviews and DVD reviews. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM and like our page, because that's how we get power and we'll take over the universe. We need a little more than like the couple hundred people that like us. So go out there. You can go to and email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com or give us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. Now, Vish, tell us a little bit about yourself and why I chose you. Maybe you don't know why I chose you for the show.
I happen to be available today.
You are not busy.
And you are getting lonely.
Yeah, exactly.
So I met Kevin something like a decade ago when he taught me my first...
More than.
Yeah.
It was more than a decade. It was like 2000. 2000, 2001,
right,
something like
maybe,
that.
Maybe, yes. 12, 11, 13 years, something like that. But he taught me my first screenwriting class. Yeah. I did my first fade-in under his tutelage. And we've been in touch off and on since then.
Sucker.
We've been in a couple of... a couple of short video movies and so on and so forth. And it was nice to run into him again at a movie screening recently. And we caught up and it seemed like we were still doing the same stuff.
And it's a movie we are reviewing today. And I was like, hey, I emailed him and I'm like, hey, Vish, you've seen this movie. So you can come into the magical studio in the sky and we can talk about it.
And I said, in my best Indian accent, for sure.
Yeah, because you're not Indian at all.
No, I play one on TV.
You're Dutch or something like that, right?
That's isn't what, that it, what is. It is. Check out my shoes.
Exactly. And part of the other thing is I'm gonna make you do this. I'll probably do this in the middle segment. Vish does probably the best Sean Connery impression that I've ever heard.
That doesn't make any sense.
Well,
it's still an impression.
You don't quite look the part.
No.
I look a little closer to Sean Connery.
That's what you think, laddie.
That's right. But we'll have him do his full Untouchables monologue. In the middle segment.
Mammoth is alive, but he'll still be turning.
That's right. I'll take a picture of him. I'll put it up there so you can see what he looks like while he's ranting as Sean Connery. What are your connections? Do you have any other connections to the arts or anything? Because you're a very analytical guy.
Yeah, so I spent most of my professional life in financial functions around the city. But theater's always been interesting. Cinema has always been interesting. The arts in general. But I would say the two focal points are cinema and theater.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sucks to be them.
But, yeah, you always have. What I always have been impressed by you is your knowledge of cinema. And, of course, obviously you have a great love for Indian cinema as well. And I don't have much exposure to that.
Yeah. The love for Indian cinema has been fading lately, only because I think the movie quality has gone down. But there are still nuggets every once in a while. Yeah.
Every now and then when I see an Indian movie, I'm like, oh, I wonder what Vish thought of that.
If he's even capable of thinking about these things anymore.
Well, no, you're a very intelligent man.
Oh, thank you.
And that's always very neat. But yeah, I just thought it would be kind of nice to have him come in and talk about stuff. Now, we saw each other. We ran into each other at a screening of Cabin in the Woods, which we'll be talking about later. And in fact, if you go to filmschoolrejects.com, you can see an extended interview I did with the star, Kristen Connolly, and director Drew Goddard. And we got a little bit of discussion about, various things about blood. There's a little bit of discussion of blood. There's also a little bit of discussion about Kristen Connolly in her underwear, because I'm that kind of guy. I will ask those hard-hitting professional questions to pretty actresses. In
did you start with, how did you get into character?
I said, how'd you get into those panties? Because they were really small. No. I think, what my first question to Kristen was, and this will make more sense. When he come talk about Cabin in the Woods, it's going to be a very difficult discussion because there's a lot of spoilers and stuff like that we don't want to give away, but we also want to talk about the movie and give it something worthwhile. But I think my first question to Kristen was, you get a little blood on you, don't you? And she's like, oh yeah, just a little bit. So she gets very bloody in this movie. So
they all do, it seems.
Yeah. Are you like horror movies in general?
Yeah, but I'm vegetarian.
So it's terrifying.
Yeah. I haven't seen a lot, but I am quite enjoying the genre after The Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah. Oh, have you what's your favorite in the genre right now? Do you have any?
Nothing comes to mind, but in the course of the discussion, if something does, I will mention it.
What's your favorite type of movie?
Lately it's been science fiction.
Really?
Galaxy Quest.
Yeah,
Contact. Great. Contact.
Well, I don't know about that.
Okay. There's still a couple of scenes in there that are extremely well done.
Yeah.
Star Trek, the First Contact. Star Trek, First Contact.
Oh, I saw that on my wedding day.
Yeah. Wow. Did you see parallels between the bar and the loved one?
Well, what happened? We had an evening wedding, and it was and it was a new movie out. And when women get married, get ready for a wedding, it's an all-day event. They go get their hair done, and they go get their nails polished and manicured, pedicure. Then they take 18 hours to get into the dress and
that's right. Everything.
Guys, they like show up a half hour beforehand. They make sure their suits are on and zipped up flies, and that's it.
Yeah, the only thing you do before you leave your rented apartment is shave.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much. That's it. I don't think they can tell if you showered or not.
No, you don't need to because you sweat anyways. But, but no, my groomsmen and I, we went and woke up the next morning after the bachelor party, which wasn't that big wild thing or anything. So, and we're just like, well, we got like 8 hours to kill. So what do you want to do? Well, let's go get pizza and then go see a movie. So we saw a movie on my wedding day.
I was thinking of Moon as well. I don't know if you saw it. Sam Rockwell.
Yeah. Is it? It's Duncan Jones, right?
Who's right. David Bowie's son. By a different name or something.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah, yeah, and he also did Source Code last year.
Source Code was very good. Yeah,
very good. So those are some good movies. So bravo, bravo-ish. Well,
thank you. I'm still assimilating.
Yeah, well, that's okay. You've had 20 years. Get with the program. Anyway, speaking of science fiction, we have the first movie we're going to talk about is Lockout, in which Guy Pearce stars as a wrongfully convicted felon who has to rescue the president's daughter from a prison. Wait for it. In space.
Mr. President,
there's been a massive takeover on MS-1.
My daughter is on a goodwill mission on that station.
There's only one man who can get her out.
Who?
Snow.
Don't get me wrong, it's a dream vacation. I mean, I go into space, I get inside the maximum security nut house, get past all the psychos, save the president's daughter if she's not dead already. I'm thrilled that you would think of me.
Excellent.
For some strange reason, I have been dying to see this movie. I cannot explain why I really, 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 really want to see this movie, but I do.
Guy Pearce.
But he's been in crap. I mean, you just can't throw it out. You say, well, Guy Pearce. Well, I'm sure I can find some.
Let me try again. President's daughter.
Well, Maggie Grace. Actually, she's from Columbus. Did you know that?
Who is this?
Maggie Grace, who plays the president.
Oh, right. Okay, I know
she's
the name.
From Worthington. She went to my alma mater's rival. But yeah, she has sort of, kind of had a bit of a career. It's been, had its ups and downs. She was on Lost.
Right.
And she's never quite broken out, but maybe she'll break out in this one. It just looks like I have spent a lot of time going to these all-night movie marathons, these sci-fi movies. They didn't screen it for us because it's a smaller group. But I go to these all-night movie marathons, and this reminds me of that kind of movie where
nice.
It does not get the wide release, or it gets a very forgettable wide release, but it's a heck of a lot of fun to watch.
And it'll have the following.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be fun. So I'm just looking forward to it. It just looks kind of cool, but nothing. It's not epic, but yeah. I think it'll be neat to watch.
I mean, there's other places you can put the president's daughter, but why not space?
Exactly. And with that, we're going to go to a break. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are here with Vish, and we were just talking a little bit about Lockout. And you said you like sci-fi. I mean, do you like the big sci-fi movies, or the high-profile ones, or do you like the crap? I love sci-fi crap.
I don't mind any version as long as it's done well. You go in with a set of assumptions. If it's supposed to be ridiculous amounts of blood 3 seconds into the movie, I'll take it.
Okay. Do you ever watch like the Sci-Fi Channel has those really bad knockoffs?
No, I keep wanting to, but I haven't.
They're
so
awful.
Yeah.
Have you seen some of the classic? Like really sort of cheesy Roger Corman type.
Yeah, of course.
Have you seen Death Race 2000?
Things that are slightly better than Plan 9 didn't make the turkey cut.
Yes.
I wouldn't know the names, but I keep running into them all the time, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, those they're fun. They're fun in their own
way. Yeah. You just have to be in the mood and you'll you know, vegetate in front of the TV and probably many more hours. Like Starship Troopers.
I love Starship
Troopers. Yes, that's exactly it. So.
It's such an absolute
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship, Kevin. 10 years in the making, and then some.
Yeah, but no, Starship Troopers is great. I love the... I like just the fun action kind of thing. As much as I like the con, I mean, like 2001's great, sure.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, 1984 is a really interesting film from a sci-fi perspective. But you know, then contemplative is good. But I also just like, and that's I think part of the reason why I'm looking forward to Lockout.
Yeah,
because it just looks like it's Alien versus Predator without the aliens or Predator. Right.
Like exactly. Like Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to make any sense.
It doesn't.
Everybody has some superpower which they manifest when...
Did you know that Big Trouble in Little China was meant to be original? I think it was originally meant to, and they changed it a little bit for the movie. It was originally meant to be a sequel to Buckaroo Banzai.
No way.
Have you seen Buckaroo Banzai?
A long time ago, yes.
Yeah, and that is out there. They showed that at the Sci-Fi Marathon last year. Here in Columbus, and my son watched it, and it makes no sense.
Absolutely, over the top is fine.
Yeah, but what's funny is when it was made, the jokes didn't play. It's one of those movies that actually, in its time, felt too consistent to actually play as a joke. I thought.
Okay.
But then when you watch it now, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Do you think these kinds of movies change our perception of the movies? Oh, but we don't know that it's happening. Do they get into our subconscious and then just stay there for a while, and then you start identifying other things that are similar to them?
I think it happens sometimes, movies being ahead of their time.
Right.
And that's exactly...
Office Space.
Yeah, yeah. That one kind of came and went, but then, well, you got to work in an office. If you see Office Space in a vacuum, it's like Dilbert. You know, if you were to read... I remember I read Dilbert before I worked in an office, and I was like, funny, that's cute. Then I worked in an office, just a soul-killing, blood-sucking office. And as a white elephant gift, I got a Dilbert book. It became suddenly my favorite thing. And now I don't work in an office anymore.
And then it stopped being funny for me because I would say, this thing happened last week. I know that guy.
It's too painful.
And then it was, yes, that's what it was. I didn't want to relive those experiences.
You're having like flashbacks.
I know. It's like, don't take me back to 1992. I don't need to remember those years. I was hoping to sleep through the whole thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, no, that's absolutely right. But I have to give Lockout a preemptive suck. That's how we grade films here. Suck or rocks.
A either preemptive suck?
Well, it gets a preemptive suck because they didn't show it to us. Ah. So it just by contract, I'm contractually obligated to say it sucks. But I'm sure I'm going to love it.
Take that Lockout.
That's right. Guy Pierce. You and your president's
That's
daughter.
Even your real name.
the next one we're going to talk about. Let's talk about Cabin in the Woods. Because this is the one that's getting a lot of buzz. Let's just go ahead and play the trailer. A group of friends head to a cabin in the woods for a weekend and face horrific events.
We're looking for, what's it called?
Tillerman Road.
Not to get you there. Getting back. That's your concern.
The lambs have passed through the gate. They are come to the killing floor.
I seriously believe something weird is going on.
What is that thing?
We have to stay together. This isn't right. We should split up.
Yeah, good idea.
Really?
Now, before we really talk about the film, I'm going to warn the audience, we're not going to spoil things. And if Vish does swerve into a spoiler, I'll just, you know, smack him in the head.
I'm so used to that anymore.
And we'll bleep it out or something like that. Because, and I even address this with Drew Goddard when I talk to him. I'm like, because part of the thing is when you see the movie, you know, it starts as just a standard Cabin of the Woods, you know, an Evil Dead or a Cabin Fever kind of movie. But there's a lot more to it. And it's worth noting. There's a lot more to it. It's a real fine line to walk.
They definitely start with the formula.
Yeah. And I mean, they tip their hat in the beginning to say, hey, there's more to it than this. So, you know, from the opening scene, you know that there's more than just a bunch of kids going to the woods and getting eaten or something.
And what I noticed was they got through the conventional stuff quickly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's worth, because it's funny, because I asked that of Drew, and I saw some people talking about that on Twitter this week. It's important that the potential audience knows there's more to it than just a bunch of kids, you know, facing like Evil Dead. It's more than just a bunch of kids facing zombies and killer rapey trees. So it's a movie that it plays with convention. It tips its hat at the genre, and a lot of cool stuff happens. What's interesting about it is, and anyone who knows me, knows I'm not a big Joss Whedon fan. I've really not liked, I didn't like Dollhouse, I didn't like Firefly, I didn't like Serenity, never got interested in Buffy, was predicated by not, then later on not getting interested in Angel, so I just, I just don't like his stuff. But this is a, it has sort of his core group of people, and he helped write it, but there's a lot of other influences on there, and it didn't feel like a Joss Whedon movie.
I hope you give Firefly another chance. I don't know if you're going to be able to do it again. Okay.
I saw Serenity.
Okay.
Didn't like it.
Okay.
And watched then you saw Firefly? Firefly. And my wife and I kind of watched the whole thing, and then afterwards we looked at each other and we both complained about the same things. And then we watched Serenity and didn't like it.
Found footage.
No. No. That would be
among
bad.
Other things, you know.
We don't need
headache inducing found footage.
There needs to be no more found footage.
That's right.
But what are your thoughts, Vish, on Cabin?
I enjoyed the movie tremendously.
You're not well versed.
Don't get out that much, and yeah, absolutely no horror flicks and upending of horror flick type movies in my menu. But I was embarrassed how entertained I was about this movie.
Yeah,
sat there and laughed at the jokes and rooted for the good people.
Very funny.
It is extremely funny. It's like you said. It's one of those movies that has to take itself seriously but chooses not to.
Yeah. No. Well, and the best kind of comedy is done, and I use the word comedy very loosely with this movie because it's not a comedy. It has some great funny moments, but it's not a comedy. Like Beverly Hills Cop was more of a comedy.
Right.
48 Hours was a little more of a drama with a lot of comedy in it. Going to a totally different genre there. But you have to take comedy seriously because then it just becomes one of those... Salzburg, Friedberg, kind of whoever those people were that did like scare epic movie and disaster movie and all those. Okay. Then it just becomes just you're not just winking and nodding at the audience. You're like the pathetic humor guest on.
Take
Johnny
a
Carson.
Scene from this movie. Take a scene from that movie. Yeah. Do the silliest thing you can with it. No, this has a full fledged story.
Yeah,
everything is supposed to make sense, and it does.
It totally does, and it works for what it does. And there's only one little thing, and I'm not going to say it's because it's a huge spoiler, but there's one little thing I did not like about it, but I totally understand why they did that. And I'm like, okay, they did that because they needed this certain thing to happen, and that
satisfies the
and that. It was worth it for that. But, right. I mean, it still didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right.
But
by that point, you're prepared to forgive them for everything.
Yeah.
Including
so
this.
It goes so off the rails and has such fun with the genre and does such a great job. And, you know, even... And it's funny because there was stuff I was picking out. Like, I may actually mention to Drew Goddard the scene where... Right at the beginning, Kristen Connolly's in her underwear packing her bags. This is not a spoiler. And I even asked her, I said, did you pack for this trip in your underwear? And she's like, I do everything in my underwear. And I mentioned to Drew Goddard, I'm like, that reminded me a lot of the scene in Final Destination 4. And he's like, I've not even seen that. Because there's a scene in there where this girl, she's just walking around in these tiny little pink or green panties for no reason whatsoever, just to show her butt, which was, I appreciated, you know, so.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah. No, it's a great movie. I think it's worth checking out. It's definitely something to look at. So I'm going to give it a rocks.
Absolutely.
You agree?
Count me in.
You can say kind of rocks, or is it full on rocks?
No, unconditional rocks.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely go check this one out, because it's going to be one of the more unique movies
you see. It's tracking really well with the audiences already. What preview audiences.
I hope it does
well. It deserves all the attention it can get.
Next, we're going to move on. There's not a whole lot we can say about this next movie, and we got about 30 seconds here, so we're just going to leave you with the trailer, and we'll maybe just talk a little bit about it when we come back. And that is The Three Stooges, in which the Farrelly brothers destroy the brilliantly comedic slapstick legends. And here it is.
What is that gadget?
This is an iPhone.
iPhone?
Uh-huh.
Hello? Hello? There's nobody there.
Get some mow.
Spread out. Mind your P's and Q's.
Don't forget to dot the I's.
Certainly.
Larry.
He's got a headache.
No, I don't.
How about now?
Yeah, it's coming on.
And Curly.
You got any dynamite?
We just came out of that real quick.
Okay.
We got about 10 seconds. This movie looks terrible. I'm not interested in seeing it. I'm going to have to.
I have no idea. I've seen the trailer and... Kate Upton looks nice in it, but that's about it.
Yeah, looks
terrible. There's nothing. No, I have nothing to give.
It's going to suck. Go to a break.
22 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck,
44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. It is Kevin Carr here with Vish.
Hello.
He's the Vicious. Sid Vicious is what he's named after. No, that's not what you're named after.
No.
No. You know.
But
know
I'll take it.
You know who Sid Vicious
I know
is.
The name. It's one of those things that shows up in a search and I have
punk,
no idea.
Punk rock icon, yeah. Played by Gary Oldman in Sid and Nancy. That just came out on Blu-ray like, I don't know, 6 or 9 months ago.
Speaking of which, how was Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy? Did you get to see it and review it here?
I did. Here's the thing with Tinker Tailor, and I talked about this on the show when it came out. It's one of those movies that I respect and can give a little bit of an honor to more than I actually enjoyed it. Part of it is it's a better movie than this one, but it reminds me of the movie Invictus.
Okay.
With that
Clint Eastwood and
Clint Eastwood did
Morgan Freeman
and Matt Damon. But that was one that if you didn't understand rugby, it didn't make a whole lot of sense they'd have these whole rugby sequences and you just didn't quite know what was going on because a lot of us dumb stupid Americans will sit there and look at stuff and be like, oh, it's just football. It's not. There's a lot more. This is very different. You know, it's like comparing cricket to baseball.
Right.
I mean, there's a certain parallel, but it's extremely different. And that's part of my problem I had with Tinker Tailor. I don't understand how British intelligence works. I don't understand British history from that era. So it was a little bit hard to follow at times.
The who's who of British cinema was in the movie, though.
No, it had everybody.
So performances were good.
You could
it's
have pulled
just
all
context.
The,
yeah.
You could have pulled all the best actor nominees from that entire show.
Wow. I mean,
well, because you had Gary Oldman, you had Colin Firth, who won the Oscar last year, and you had, I thought Toby Jones did a fantastic job, and Benedict Cumberbatch did a great job, and, Tom Hardy did a great job. I mean, you had a lot of great, Mark Strong did a great job. I mean, they had everybody. But it was also, what's interesting about the movie is, when you think spy movies, especially last December when it came out, it was coming up against, Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, which was a fantastic action movie. I loved it. But that's what people think when they think of spy movies.
So, and parents are wondering where you're going to leave the kids if you're going to go and see Tinker Tailor.
Yeah, Tinker Tailor. Yeah, Tinker Tailor is a spy movie, but it's what real spies do, which means sitting in a dark room listening to a lot of things.
Right. So you might as well take them to a Mission Impossible 4 and watch them fly off a building.
Yeah, it's rare for spies to actually be scaling giant buildings and
that's what it is.
And chasing down cars and stuff like that and having a giant fight sequence.
It's actually the prequel to MI4. They were just going to tell Tom Cruise to go and jump off the building.
Yeah, so there you go. That would have been great.
They were plotting it.
That took forever. And it was
please go to the top floor. Don't jump off the second floor.
Yeah, in 40 years.
That's right. That's what it was. Yes.
Kick that lady
out. So science fiction, really.
Back yeah, exactly. No, but it's. Did you see Tinker Tailor?
I have not. I keep meaning to do it, but I haven't.
It's good. It's a cerebral movie.
Okay.
And the Brits love it, but I think it got lost on a lot of American. It's got so much. So many people know about the story or are aware of the book and how popular it is, but no one's read it in America.
It's like the coffee table book that nobody opens.
Yeah.
It's always in everybody's consciousness.
Yeah.
Like A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking.
But I read that one.
You,
I did.
You're a better man than I am.
You didn't read it?
I have not. I have not committed it to memory either.
You're an idiot. No, I'm just kidding. You don't know anything.
I feel an obligation to read it now.
Well, it's actually a very well-written book. I can see why Brief History of Time became so well-known because it wasn't just the, I'm going to buy it because it's cool.
Yeah.
But it was, it does boil down a lot of, this theoretical physics to a very understandable level.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't read any of Hawking's other sort of quote-unquote mainstream books.
Yeah.
But it presents a lot of theoretical physics in a way that is very digestible.
Accessible. Okay. Very cool.
So it's
note to self.
Note to self. Right there. Here, get that down.
scribble.
Because you're a smart guy. I heard that somewhere.
You're talking about 10 years ago.
How many degrees do you have?
Two or three. Who's counting?
What are they in?
Actuarial science, financial analysis, and statistics.
So that's what it is. You're just a very boring person.
That's what I'm going for. I'm going for boring.
But you like movies.
And occasionally
good.
I sneak out and watch a movie. Yeah,
there you go. But that's good. That's good. anyways, we had a little talk about the Three Stooges. We'll talk about that a little bit more later on in this segment. Since I'm giving you grief here, let's do your Sean Connery.
Let's
impression.
Do it.
Because I think it's hilarious. And you use it for nobody. This is completely lost on anybody listening because, first of all, I'm sitting across a room from Vish, and he used to have a beard. And it's a very manly beard that you used to have. That's it wasn't bushy, but it really kind of made your face.
I oriented it, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it looked...
The goal was to look mean.
Yeah, I mean, you looked like you could have been a Bond villain. Totally.
In my own Not sleepless now. Nights, that's what I'm fantasizing about.
You said your wife would come home, you're stroking this white cat.
That's what it is.
Welcome back to the house.
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
But I think, but you know, you have such a warm, cuddly face, and then you put the beard on, you suddenly became evil. You're sort of like Spock.
That's what it is. It depends on the episode.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So, yeah, you know, so I'm clean-shaven and bespectacled now. I'm going for a different kind of credibility.
Well, not it's all that...
creepy everybody.
All that math nonsense that's going on.
That's what it was. It fades fast. So, yeah, so I watched Untouchables back in India, back when it came out, and I didn't know who David Mamet was. Of course, everybody knows Sean Connery in India.
Really?
Yeah. Was he a big... Because the James Bond movie showed up, and they probably ran for a full year each.
Okay.
And so that was a lot of fun. People probably didn't understand what was going on, but you know who the good guy is. And
even though he would have been out of the Bond movies for, gosh, what, 17, 16
Yeah, those things
years?
Kept coming back. They were always there. My earliest memories of James Bond were probably Live and Let Die era. Mm. So it was Live and Let Die and The Man with the Golden Gun. So it was all Roger Moore.
Yeah,
and then the Sean Connery movies recycled afterwards, and they'd show up periodically.
Well, yeah. Well, because the thing is, in America, at least, I don't know what it was like in India, but his career was kind of just nowhere at that point. And it was The Untouchables that revived his career.
That's what it was. And he got the Best Supporting Actor nomination, and he also won it.
Yeah. Well, and what was neat about The Untouchables is it was people like, oh, shit, this guy's still around. But he had gone through this awkward phase, like when he was doing, like, Outland and stuff like that.
Right, Robin Hood and some vague stuff.
Yeah, he was like, he wasn't young enough to be the Bond, sexy Bond, but he wasn't old enough to be the seasoned veteran.
Right.
And so he was in that weird, you know, a lot of actors, like Frank Langella went through that too, where he wasn't quite the old doughy, but he also wasn't the young, fit Frank Langella.
Right.
He had to make that transition. And this was the one where he broke out.
Yeah, and then I think he went from suave and debonair to gritty or something like that. And then, and then he was gritty for a decade, and he worked quite well.
Yeah.
So this is the church scene.
Yeah.
Where he's sitting there with Kevin Costner, Elliot Ness, and then he tells him how to get Capone. So I'm going
to
do this, and you can all laugh in the comfort
and you
of
have
your
to
own.
You have to picture, I don't know how, I mean...
An Indian
generic
guy.
Indian guy. like Frida Pinto with a beard.
That would be a generic Indian
That's
guy.
That's a generic Indian guy. Yeah,
that's how I think of Frida Pinto, too.
Horrifying. But you got to picture that. You know, so right. Go ahead and do it. Yeah,
you say you want to get Al Capone. Well, here's how you get Capone. He pulls a knife. You pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital. You send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. And that's how you get Capone.
And scene. That's right.
Print.
So that's, yeah, and for the longest time, I wanted to just get you on video doing that, because I think that's just such a funny...
That'll cost you another $5.
Oh, there we go. I'll have to buy you, like a smoothie or something like that.
A Slurpee.
I was going to say I'd have to buy you, like, you know, like chicken nuggets or something, but you're a vegetarian.
That's what it is. Especially after a cabin in the woods.
Are you really? That's
I was
that's
raised opposite. Vegetarian, and I've stayed vegetarian. It's got nothing to do with cabin in the woods.
Cabin in the woods, you're like,
nothing in my life has anything to do with cabin in the woods, except 2 hours well spent.
He had a turkey leg in his car he was going to eat, and then
That's what it is. And they said no food in the movies.
There you go. So.
Or else.
I couldn't. You see, I love animals. They're delicious.
Speaking of which, your dog is mighty appetizing right now.
She always is. But what's going to take you off the wagon, I guess. Your dog looks really delicious right now.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about something. Another movie. This kind of came quickly. You haven't had a chance to see it. I just got a chance to see it. It's made a lot of news, and that's Bully, in which director Lee Hirsch examines several cases of bullying in this high-profile documentary.
A Perkins boy, just 11 years old, believed to have been desperate enough to take his own life.
This is an awfully complicated and difficult issue.
Kids will be kids, boys will be boys. They're just cruel at this age.
Here what we get is nothing's wrong. We didn't do anything. Everything's fine.
They punch me, strangle me, take things from me. Sit on me.
Give it to him hard!
He's not safe on that bus.
You, I'm assuming, already know about Bully and
just headlines.
You're aware of the whole MPAA fight.
Right, the rating issue.
By the way, you can swear in this segment. I know you don't really
screw that.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's nothing. But the thing is, and the reason I'm going to say this is because it makes sense with the rating, because the rating they had, they got an R rating and it caused this big hubbub, a big kerfuffle. And the
speaking of swearing, kerfuffle right there.
Kerfuffle, yes, that's like an 8-letter word. But but the Weinsteins were all, you know, bullying, trying to bully the MPAA, and the MPAA was trying to bully them, and it's just all this bullying going on. And the thing that pissed me off is no one seemed to recognize Harvey Weinstein knew damn well that this movie was going to get an R rating when he submitted it. It says fuck five or six times, and it uses the term motherfuck or motherfucker in it, which is a big no-no by the MPAA. Everybody knows that. Whether you agree with it or not, that is going to get you an R rating, period. And so he did, and then when it got this PG-13, he was like, oh my gosh, I got an R rating. I want a PG-13. And then he started like acting like the victim and made a bigger case than what it is. And yes, it's getting the movie publicity, but I think that it is a little bit of disingenuous on their part. Mm-hmm. And it's too much of a publicity stunt. I think he kind of roped Lee Hirsch into fighting his battle with the MPAA for him, which I thought, again, disingenuous, dishonest. When it comes to the movie, look, it's not a bad movie. It's not something that you're going to see. And, you know, I'm not saying don't go see it, because at the very least it can start a discussion or that kind of thing. However, the people that need to see the movie, that need to be adjusted on the bullying, they're not going to go see the damn movie. Unless they're forced by their school to go see it. I'm talking about the bullies mm-hmm. and their parents. And the bullies, if the bullies see the movie, they're going to be forced to go see it with their... And I hate to tell you, they're just going to make fun of the movie.
Because
they're bullies.
Does it serve a purpose at all? Does it make parents of kids who are bullied more aware of what's going on in school?
I think so. I mean, it does show this sort of daisy chain of failures that go on in some of these mm-hmm. schools. But on part of it, like, it shows there's this one just colossally incompetent administrator at one of the schools, and where they're like, and it shows what an absolute mess. And she's like, oh, well, we really can't do anything about it. And you're just like, no, yeah, you can. And, but the thing is, that is atypical. My wife's a teacher. My kids go to school, two separate school districts. There's plenty of bullying programs and reporting possibilities in place. It is not, and I'm not saying that bullying doesn't exist, because it sure as hell does. But my son's school, it's easy to report this. So it's atypical. It reminds me a little bit of that movie, Waiting for Superman, that came out, that identified these terrible school districts. And then suddenly it's like, oh, everybody's got molesting teachers that are put on leave, but they've got tenure, so we're still paying them big salaries. And that's totally not the case. And all it did was foster an environment to get, you know, just terrible legislation trying to be shoved through by certain political interests. And not in a good or realistic manner. And the other thing with Bully is it, I think it's a bit of a missed opportunity, because it spotlights some very specific kids that are victimized, but they just went straight for the stereotypes. The big focus of us, they have the two kids in there who have been mm-hmm. made the news for having committed suicide. But that's all retrospective stuff, because they weren't there before it happened. And that's something else that bothered me. Just incidentally, when those stories made news, it bothered me, because I'm like, the last thing you want to do is send the message to troubled teens that if you really want to get noticed, commit suicide.
Yes.
And then people, I mean, you don't want to say, because that, I mean, and I'm not dissing these people whose parents, because I can't even imagine the grief and horror that you have to go through. And mm-hmm. I'm not questioning their judgment or anything. I'm just everybody glomming onto this and saying, oh, use this and let their voice be heard. You're like, well, now you're just saying the best way to get noticed is to kill yourself, which is not at all a message you want to have out there for teens.
No.
And so, but the other kids that they profile one kid who's socially awkward. He's got thick glasses. He's a little bit strange looking. He has just no friends. He's very skinny and he gets bullied. Then you have this one girl who's a lesbian. But I mean, they went for the most stereotypical looking lesbian. I mean, sort of that Justin Bieber haircut and all the jokes you can think of kind of embodied here. And they had the one girl who was this very awkward and skinny girl from the ghetto who pulled a gun on kids in a school bus. So they went to the extreme cases, and I think it would have been more impactful if they either A, showed the average kids who gets bullied. Because you don't see that average kid getting bullied. You think of the extreme cases. And as heartbreaking as those are, I think it's more of a ubiquitous problem across the thing. And I also think it would have been interesting to profile the bullies themselves.
Oh, they were not?
They were not. It's just all victims. Which, again, a missed opportunity. And maybe it's they wouldn't... But like, for example, the girl who was the lesbian, she was from, I think, somewhere in Bible Belt, Oklahoma. So like the whole town's against her. And I'm like, you really could not find one person to go on camera to talk about, especially if there it's my faith that this is a sin and this is okay. And she needs to be blah, 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 blah. You can't find one.
Should not have been a problem.
You should have been able to find somebody right. like that. And I think you. So it sort of almost. It almost exploits the victims a little too much.
So is this movie a lot of cliche, would you guess, based on what you've experienced? Or would you think a more moderate tone would have helped it?
I don't think it shows bullying as a problem. I think it marginalizes it into the extremes, whereas I think everybody had some sort of bullying happening to them everywhere. Even the bullies get bullied, which it helps them be bigger bullies. And I think it marginalizes the victims a little bit too much into the extreme. But I mean, were you bullied in school? Did you encounter that?
Not in school, but there is this equivalent thing in college called ragging.
Yeah.
And it happens a lot, and it's gotten worse. Girls commit suicide. Girls commit suicide. There'd be people at bus stops who are carrying knives and so on.
Well, I mean, is it, what do you mean by, is it just they get harassed or something?
They get harassed, sexually harassed, physically harassed. It depends on the university that you go to.
Is it
and
sort of
there
like
is
a,
just no control around it. Grassroots efforts, but nothing.
What's the reason for it? Is it because of looks, because they're weird, or what?
No, it's the second-year students taking advantage of the first-year students.
Hazing, basically.
Hazing is, yeah.
But it's called ragging?
It's called ragging in India. But it's the equivalent of hazing here in dormitories.
Yeah. So, I mean, did you see any of it happening? I think it's interesting to talk to you about this, because you're mm-hmm. getting a very different cultural perspective. Did you see... Do you have bullying problems in Indian schools?
In schools, not as much. There is always the general fear of the senior students, uh-huh. the ones that are older than you. But it depends on which school you go to. I had the advantage of going to a private school, so it was under control.
Uh-huh.
Public schools, on the other hand, have much more loose.
Do like the nerdy kids or do the weird kids?
See,
get
nerd
picked on?
Nerd is a subcategory in the U.S. that gets laughed at. Mm-hmm. In India, you succeed if you do well.
Well, but I'm not just talking about like intelligence, like kids that look weird, kids that have big buck teeth, kids that have, you know.
Yes, they'd get their names and they'd get marginalized and so
That's
on and
so
forth. Yeah, it won't come out as I'm going to stop you during the lunch break, during recess, and take advantage of you in some fashion or get money out of your pockets or anything. You'll start by getting marginalized. I would say in schools it's a little lower. Mm-hmm. Than it is in the schools here, but I think it's much heavier in the colleges in India.
So you'll
get to it eventually. But
eventually
not just
it happens.
Yeah.
Did you have anyone that picked on you?
Yeah, fortunately I went to a college which didn't look very favorably on this sort of activity, so they came down heavily on it. But it's an isolated experience.
Okay.
Girls commit suicide, boys commit suicide, not being able to handle the hazing.
Yeah. And I think that the big focus they have on this is the kids that have gotten that have committed suicide and they show the families trying to bring light to that. And here's what I find interesting about this is I knew several people who've committed suicide. Everybody tends to at least at some point, 6 degrees of separation. But I had a really good friend in high school, very, very good friend in high school who was suicidal. And he had some serious mental problems. It wasn't because of bullying. He was just, had some real issues. He never succeeded. He was a real failure at committing suicide, which was good. You know, and he grew up and his levels leveled out, and he ended up, he's got a family and lives, a happy life and everything like that. So he's grown up and, good for him. I did know another friend of mine who, I hung around a lot with in high school who, when he had, I can't remember whether he was in college or I know I was in college when this happened and he had committed suicide. And did he get bullied? Did he get teased? Yeah. But I don't think he committed suicide because of that. I mean, some Look, teen suicide happens, and it's not a good thing, but it's not always because somebody's writing nasty things about them on a Facebook wall. And I guess I question part of it because there's a certain hyperactivity now when people say bullying. So if somebody just calls you, if somebody just sneers at you, they're like, bully, 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 he's a bully, which is a big difference than giving somebody a swirly in the bathroom. You know, and I think that, and then on top of it, there's a scene in Bully where the one kid, Alex, the very awkward, you know, nerdy, typical nerd glasses kid, he's at a bus stop. And this is where a lot of the swearing comes on. This is what gets cut in the, they just drop out the audio during the swear words in this one particular sequence for the PG-13 version. But it happens on the street. It just happens on the street as they're waiting for the bus. The school has no control over that.
Right.
The school has no jurisdiction over what happens outside of schools. It's not on the bus. It's at a bus stop. But it's the bus stop is just where the bus stops. There's no jurisdiction whatsoever. So the school has no control over what kids do outside. You also can't legislate assholes. I mean, some people are going to be jerks. There's nothing you can do about. So, I mean, it's a very complex issue. And it's a very... And when I say a daisy chain of failure, it's not just the school, but it's the communication that some of these parents just don't communicate with their kids. You know, say, you know, the kids home come from school, what happened? Oh, nothing.
Does the movie take a position or does it assign blame? Would you say fatly?
It doesn't assign blame because I think it's trying to present it as a community problem.
Okay.
But it definitely takes a position. It's definitely an anti-bullying movie. But the other thing that the problem is that I felt that some of it just seemed very contrived. It seems set up. Like they take that kid Alex and it almost feels like he was coached by the filmmaker to say, go try and talk to these kids while the camera's on you and show what happens. So and they have some interviews with people that you're like, this one kid's like, oh, I used to be a bully, but then I hit third grade and I thought I'd be nice to everybody. And I'm like, well, that's a whole little horseshit because kids don't think that way.
A little too much character arc going on over there. Yeah.
I don't know. It's activism filmmaking.
Yeah.
Like you said, see the movie. I'm going to say it kind of rocks, but I also realize, I don't know if this is going to have any impact on anybody because it's either preaching to the choir or the people who really need to see it are either going to laugh at it if they are forced to go.
Which is the definition of a documentary. It's supposed to affect change.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing. So, but anyways, that's my thoughts on Bully. Let's talk real quick about box office winners. This last weekend, we had Titanic come back out and also American Pie or American Reunion.
Reunion.
So those are... But Hunger Games beat them all over the weekend. It had 33 million.
Is that the third week for the Hunger Games?
Third week for the Hunger Games, which is not a big surprise. I mean, the American Reunion it's been 9 years since the last movie. They had all those direct-to-video...
Almost generational. Spin-offs. All those people have gone on to seek gainful employment.
Yeah, it's
that enjoyed the movies before, yeah.
Yeah, and then it's R-rated. And R-rated movies, especially old sequels. If you wait more than 3-4 years for a sequel, it usually doesn't have the power it used to. And then Titanic did okay. But I think people just seeing movies just to see them again in 3D isn't that... It's the appeal's not as much... I mean, The Lion King did it and then nothing else has really been huge hits. But let's face it. I was reading box office reports and they were saying, oh yeah, Star Wars was kind of a flop in 3D. I'm like, it made $100 million worldwide in its 3D release. It cost $20 million to do.
What's not to like?
That's a massive profit.
It's the trade you'll be doing over and over again.
It profited in America. It made 40-some million. It profited in America.
Yes.
And everything overseas was gravy. So people are making tons of money off these movies because all you have to do is... And it was Lucas.
And
so
it's
sure
a
Lucas
whole new generation of tchotchkes for the kids.
Yeah.
It's the merchandising and...
It just keeps that alive.
Yeah. Yeah. When people come and say, you know, this movie was a $40 million movie and they spent another $40 million in the U.S. advertising and then it made only $70 million, the producers are still laughing all the way to the bank because they release it in Japan and Europe and South Asia and they make a lot of money, which they just don't bother to talk about around here. They know that they're getting to have the last laugh.
You have kids.
Yep.
You have a couple boys. Do they go see Star Wars? I mean, do they like these?
They've seen them on DVD with me.
Okay.
But they are entertained. I haven't elected to go and buy them a bunch of crap from the Star Wars store.
Yeah.
But I think it's only a matter of time. If they were more easily influenced, they'd probably be picking up stuff.
Do they ask stuff for gifts? Do they say, oh, I want a clone trooper?
Yeah, yeah. It goes from Legos to equivalents.
Yeah.
But it's only a matter of time before they all become Star Wars fans. Oh, yeah, so I think 3D is a very good strategy.
Oh, yeah.
For Lucas.
Yeah.
Lucas knows what he's doing. I don't think he can write a script to save his life. I don't think I'm offending anyone with that comment. No, he needs Lawrence Kasdan.
I love the movies, but yeah, I agree with you on
he
that.
He needs Lawrence Kasdan for that. Yeah. But I don't think he's looking at it as a one-trade deal. He's looking at every other thing. He's selling stickers to Wendy's and Burger King.
He got the rights to Star Wars merchandising when Star Wars, the first one, was coming out. And he has been exploiting that for 35 years. Yeah. And good for him. I wish I had that.
Yeah.
Because, damn it.
People are sitting, and so the calculation should not just be how much you spent on the movie and how much you got in box office, because there are 15 other cash flow streams that are going to make these guys infinitely wealthy.
Oh, absolutely. What do you think is going to win this weekend? Do you think it's going to be Cabin in the Woods? Do you think that's going to make it?
I hope Cabin dominates Hunger Games, because I think Hunger Games has a good run, and from all accounts, it's doing all right, and it's a good movie. But I think Cabin deserves the attention.
I think it's very possible for Hunger Games to win again. Because it's not uncommon to see a movie win with $20 million on the. I mean, it's good if it drops 60% or 40%, it'll be at about 20.
Yeah,
it's if can Cabin in the Woods make over 20? I hope so.
Yeah, and I think it'll get Cabin will get a lot of word of mouth.
Cabin's getting good word of mouth. The problem is the only thing it's facing is it's being that sort of that fringe market and getting that message out of is it. Right. More than just some crappy horror movie.
So all those kids that we see fidgeting with their Blackberries and PDAs in the dark theaters should be telling their friends about Cabin in the Woods this weekend.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. And then the Three Stooges. I don't think Lockout's going to do well. It's not in that many theaters. What terrifies me is if the Three Stooges is the one that's going to knock Hunger Games off.
What is the rating on Three Stooges, do you know?
I believe it's just PG.
Okay.
I'm going to check real quick. It's just PG.
So if you got your kids out there and you want to take them someplace, you're probably going to take them to the Three Stooges.
Probably Three Stooges. PG stands for pretty gross, I think. let's move on to the next thing. Speaking of the Three Stooges, we had a Fat Guy 5. We're going to do something about in space. But can you... I couldn't come up with anything good for that. So we were thinking of, like, because, you know, I had Prison in Space, which was based... It was just such a lame one. So I said, you know what? The Three Stooges is going to be so awful. Let's talk about the original Three Stooges and let's rank them. Now, you haven't seen very much.
I have not. I see bits and pieces and ads and so on. So I feel like my education is not complete.
Well, wait, the ads for this movie or the original
Three Stooges? No, I've seen the trailers for this movie.
Do you know anything
about it? I've not seen the original Three Stooges.
You have not?
No.
That's un-American.
My wife is making, absolutely, and I apologize. In fact, 1,000 apologies. You know, 1,000,000 apologies. I don't know. In a strong currency.
You should watch. I think you could. Do you like slapstick comedy?
See, I've done a lot of the Marx Brothers. I've done pretty much every one of the Marx Brothers. Yeah. The Stooges, I'll be the first one to admit that my cultural education is spotty.
Yeah.
So I've done too much of some stuff and nothing at all of the others. Yeah. So I feel reasonably ignorant.
You should check out some.
I will totally.
Because do you like the Marx Brothers? I mean,
absolutely enjoyed the Marx Brothers.
Do you watch Laurel and Hardy at all?
Yeah. Starting with India, Charlie Chaplin, done, all done on the DVDs. I guess the Three Stooges is a big hole which needs to be breached.
The Three Stooges is a little more blatant in the slapstick. They're a little more in your face. I'm not going to say mean spirited because I mean Mo rocks around. What's going on? You know, but it is. It's as basal classic slapstick as you can get. Whereas there's a little more finesse to Marx Brothers and Charlie Chaplin. Well, Charlie Chaplin was more physical comedy.
Right. With more, with time passing and my kids getting to the point where they've started recommending movies to me, I think it's only a matter of time before the slapstick comes into our house. I don't think we have a choice, so I'm just a little early on talking to you and not having seen the stuff.
Well, you got the Three Stooges at your house.
I have the three clowns, definitely. The act.
But so these are mine. Since I watch a lot of Three Stooges, I'm gonna list them as number five being the lowest. That would be Joe. That's Joe Besser, who took over for Shemp after Shemp died. And I, on a certain level, I respect what Joe did, because he did not just do a caricature Curly or Shemp. He did his own thing, which was kind of a bit of a character he had been honing in other films, sort of this lovable, sweet guy. Mm-hmm. It just didn't work with the with the Stooges, because he couldn't mix it up so much with the Stooges. So while I respected the fact that he didn't just do another version, it just wasn't that good. And like Mo and Larry were getting kind of old at the time. Then there was Shemp. Number four is Shemp. And I thought Shemp was great. And again, Shemp didn't just do another Curly, because he took over after Curly died. Shemp was not the... he didn't just do another version of Curly, but it was kind of the same ilk. I mean, he looks a lot like Curly because they're brothers. And he looks a lot like Mo. Looks more like Curly than he does Mo. But he was kind of just the big... Whereas Curly was the big lovable oaf, Shemp was the big sloppy oaf. And it worked. And I thought Shemp was good. Then my number three would be Curly. It's, of course, a classic. And he's very funny. And I remember I interviewed Bruce Campbell, because his favorite.
Yeah.
You know who his favorite?
Oh, of course.
Who's his favorite?
Oh, no, I don't know who his favorite is. I know who Bruce Campbell is.
His favorite is Shemp.
Okay.
And both him and Sam Raimi, if you watch, anytime they have like body doubles or whatever, they call them fake Shemps in their...
Fake Shemps.
In their credits. And I asked him about why he thought Shemp was his favorite. He's like, well, because he's the ugliest man in the world, whoever he is. And so he's very funny. And he says, saying Curly's your favorite is too easy. And he's right. Because Curly is, that's like, you know, I don't know. That's kind of like saying, you know, Cartman's your favorite character on South Park or something like that. Everybody would say that, you know, even though he's my favorite. But... Curly's number three. Then Mo. I thought Mo was great because he was a stalwart continuation. The Three Stooges did not completely disappear until Mo died.
Oh, the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because then that was in the '70s. But Mo was the leader, and Mo was kind of he was the anchor for everything. But my number one favorite Stooge, the only one left, Larry Fine. Larry Fine is my favorite Stooge because he was so good at working with everybody else. You never felt there was something, if there was ever something deficient, it was never because of Larry. Even when Curly died, he moved in with Shemp and did stuff perfectly with Shemp. When Shemp died, he went perfectly in with Joe. And then, you know, he eventually died or had strokes and stuff like that. And they tried to replace him, and that just never. Now, granted, at the end, they were all getting old, but they did try to replace Larry, and it just never clicked. Larry was the glue. And so Larry is my favorite Stooge.
What's your take on this movie, not having seen it?
I saw somebody say this on Twitter, so I'm stealing it. I think the Three Stooges, the movie, looks like the best impressions done for a terrible episode. Because... From the clips I've seen, Sean Hayes does a dead-on Larry Fine. Mannerisms, vocalizations, everything. He does a great Larry Fine, but it just looks he is existing in such a terrible film. And, you know, Will Sasso, I think, is sort of... I'm not terribly impressed with him. Because part of the thing is Curly wasn't that big. Curly was short. Because Mo was friggin' short.
This is the guy from Mad TV.
Yeah.
Decade and change ago.
Yeah, and I don't think, I think they got him because he looks like him. And this, I feel the same way the guy who plays Mo. I think, I don't even know the guy who plays Mo, but I think that Sean Hayes is Larry, I think he does a great Larry, but I don't know, he's sort of surrounded in poop.
Do you think they are withholding previews and critics because they know it's going to sink?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
There's no explanation.
It might do well. I mean, Jack and Jill did okay at the box office. Okay. There's no accounting for Americans' taste on these movies. But they know that, well, first of all, Fox is real picky on the screenings they do anyways. And second of all, why would they want to screen this movie? It looks absolutely freaking terrible.
So if it's a weekend that you save because the critics don't get to it.
Yeah, I'm going to see it Friday. See it Friday. And I'll hate every minute of it, I'm sure. But maybe I'll love it. See, that's the thing. I love the Stooges. Love the Stooges, but this movie looks terrible.
And you're not uncomfortable making controversial choices. Project X, for example, comes to mind.
The worst movie ever made.
I would agree with that. I was wondering if I was throwing up because of all the found footage or because of how bad the movie was.
Probably both.
Yeah, I
couldn't tell. Did you take a handful of ecstasy before you went in?
I should have. Something to keep me awake.
It's such a bad movie. Yeah. I hate found footage. I just think it's overdone. They just do it too much.
And it doesn't matter how far away you sit from the screen. You're going to suffer regardless.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I'm also calling shenanigans on these found footage things. People are like, oh, huge hit. I'm like, no, here's the thing. In the end, John Carter made more money or grossed more than Project X.
No movie can gross more than Project X.
Well, yeah. But I mean, these movies. Now, granted, and part of the thing is, but John Carter had that huge budget to overcome. The problem is Project X, the reason these movies are quote-unquote huge hits is because they cost $10 to make. They're not necessarily popular. They just have a certain group of people that if you did a bigger movie, like I remember, Project X, compared to like the A-Team, which is a big action movie from last summer, it's considered a huge bomb. More people saw that.
Yeah.
More people saw that than Chronicle or Project X. But... just because it was trying to overcome a budget. So it's not that these movies
You have to worry about the denominator.
These movies
you
are
spend
not that,
$10.
Yeah, these movies are not that popular. It's just they're so cheap.
There it's was the not a single named actor that, as far as I could tell. Project X didn't have anyone recognized. Yeah, so they're happy to be in the movie and they'll do the rounds and sign autographs and that's all it costs. Feed them for 3 nights and shoot the...
Yeah, but I mean part of it... But even like... These movies, they don't cost them. They're equivalent of what the slasher movies were in the 80s, and I love the good old slasher movies. Right. But I'll be the first to admit those movies weren't. They were popular in the sense that they made money because they could keep their costs down.
Absolutely.
And so they're no more popular than a lot of other films. It's just that, you know.
If you remember, we attended this production workshop some years back in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And there was some talk about
Dove S.S. Simmons douchebag.
Okay, yes. And he said the best way to make money and get attention is to make a slasher movie. Just throw a bunch of blood at people, and they like teenagers being chased around the woods and chopped in pieces.
That was more of a that was a holdover, I think, from his '80s lecture because it worked a lot in the '80s and in the early '90s. Slashers became torture porn, but now it's everyone doing found footage.
That's true.
You know, and they say we can do found footage for $10,000, and. You know, if it make, you know, it's like Clerks, for example. Clerks was made for $27,000. Mm-hmm. I think they put in $150,000 to finish it when Miramax bought it. And it made, like $1 million or $2 million? Well, yeah. And then people are like, oh, huge hit. And you're like, no, there are movies that make tons more than that. It just happened to be very cheap.
Right.
You know, and so that's the difference. You know this. You're an accountant.
Yeah.
Or not an account.
Yeah, I think it is a function of the denominator. What you put into it can be recovered very quickly. I don't know if Napoleon Dynamite cost a lot of money, but it made a crap load at the box office.
Yeah. That one actually was a bona fide hit. But yeah, even then, these movies don't tend to.
Yeah.
They don't tend to make a whole lot of money. So don't talk out of one mouth and say, oh, nobody saw John Carter, but everybody saw Project X when they both had about the same box office.
That's right.
So, anyways, finish this up with the honorable mention is, because this is the last stooge left, that'd be Curly Joe, this Joe Derita, who took over for Joe Besser after, when they kind of had a revival in the 60s with cartoons and television and that sort of thing. And that's about it. I think we better go to a break, and when we come back, we'll do DVDs. And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We had a long middle segment. We were talking about a whole bunch of things. We talked about Bully. We had a big discussion about Bully. And about American bullying and Indian bullying, too. Which goes on.
The two.
Global phenomenon, not necessarily always in the same places.
Right. Equally disturbing.
Yes, yes. So we have that. And we talked a little bit about box office. You know, is anything going to win this weekend over Hunger Games? And we talked a little bit about the Three Stooges. We had the top five. Stooges, we ranked, there's six Stooges. We ranked them, basically. That you haven't seen them. So.
I'm embarrassed.
Shame,
I will remedy that.
Shame. anyways, let's talk a little bit about something else. What's coming up next here?
Is it the world famous DVD Roundup, Kevin?
There we go. I always
get
that. I always do it wrong. There we are.
Much better.
It's a very sensitive whip. Sorry. Story of my life. we'll talk a little about, you haven't seen anything really, have
I
you?
Suck on this front.
You do?
Yes.
Oh, good for you.
Ocean's 11, but that's a decade and change ago.
Wait, which one? Like, oh, this is a great one. No, with Sammy and Dean.
The right? Clooney version.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
actually had, you know, intelligent lines for a change. And then 12 took care of that. Took
well,
it all back.
You know, you also had a pregnant Julia Roberts in that.
That's what it was. So, Tess.
Yes. Anyways, the ones I'll highlight, you got The Iron Lady, which, of course, stars Meryl Streep. She won the Oscar for that one. Which people forget that that was her first Oscar since Sophie's Choice.
That's been a while. Yeah, Thatcher.
30 yep. some years, yeah. And so, yep. So it was very cool. Thank you very much. That was my...
Did she thank everybody?
I
fell asleep.
I didn't watch the Oscars. I don't watch the Oscars.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, it's so pretentious. Good for Meryl. Good for her. She won. I'm happy for her. A movie that did not win any Oscars whatsoever was The Darkest Hour, and it is available in 3D on Blu-ray and DVD, about invisible aliens coming and killing everybody in Moscow.
Including the president's daughter.
Maybe.
Moscow, never mind.
Moscow, yeah. No, not in space. The president's daughter's safe in space with Guy Pearce.
I think there's a movie concept there between these two movies.
There you go. They could have a sequel. This movie, it was funny, as I actually got the 3D Blu-ray of this. And I got a 3D Blu-ray player and a 3D television this year. And I have to say, it's kind of cool. I do like it. I don't know if I'd want to watch so much, because watching an entire movie at home in 3D, because you can't like lay down on your side. And you know, it's funny, is if you stand up, my TV's across the room, but it's kind of at eye level if you're on the couch. So if you stand up and you're too high up, it distorts the image. So it's cool. I like having the 3D, but I don't know if I want to watch everything at home on 3D. And that's about it. There's a couple other ones you want to point out. A Trip to the Moon, they finally released another version of that, which is, of course,
the old George Millais.
Yeah, the George
Millais. The original George Millais, okay.
Yeah, and I'm assuming there's other George Millais shorts.
Oh, did this come out because of Hugo and the attention to the movie?
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually rented over Christmas break with my kids. I rented one of the sort of assemblance. It was, I think, the complete works of George Millais. And we didn't watch everything, because some of those early films are basically... dog walks by a house. You know, 30 seconds of a dog walking by the house.
Drain.
Well, because it was all, yeah, it was all very novelty at that time. And
right.
What Millais did was put some story to it. And we watched a couple, and it was actually kind of neat to watch some of these old original short films. So Trip to the Moon is there, the original version.
Nice.
Which is really cool to see, especially if you've seen.
But not in 3D.
No, it's not in 3D yet. Although, I'm sure...
It's only a matter of time.
Hugo was in 3D.
Yeah.
So if you really want to see what it looked like in 3D, watch Hugo.
We'll attribute everything to George.
There's also Night Gallery, Season 3, which is the Rod Serling post-Twilight Zone, Twilight Zone show.
Did
you ever watch
I've Night watched Gallery? Twilight Zone.
Did you watch
Night
Gallery?
Not Night Gallery.
It's very similar. It's the same kind of, you know, vignette stories.
Isn't there only a finite number of twists and... Twilight Zone took care of all of them except for The Sixth Sense.
Twilight Zone wasn't necessarily twist. Oh, no, I'm sure The Sixth Sense version was in there, too.
I actually do believe it was.
Very cliche.
Yeah.
Rod Serling. Twilight Zones weren't necessarily twists. They were just, some of them didn't have to be twists. Some of them were just, it was an anthology story. So it was old sci-fi type stuff you'd find in an old magazine. And that's what Night Gallery was. It's just the writing wasn't as good, and he was a little older, and it was in the 70s. And speaking of, 60s actually, for this one, is Dark Shadows, fan favorites. That is the original Dark Shadows show back from the 60s. The fans have picked their favorite episodes, because there's like 9 million episodes of it, because it was a daily series. It was shot like a syndicated serial.
Smart way to repackage this.
Because you can't, it's like 1,000 episodes or something like that. So it would be, you know, discs and discs and discs. So they got Dark Shadows, the fan favorite, so you can check out some of the classic episodes of that before you go see Johnny Depp ruin it in his movie.
What's the Tim Burton Johnny Depp collaboration? Is it going to be with us for the rest of our lives?
I don't know. I don't have a problem with Tim Burton and Johnny Depp. I think they work well together. I like Johnny Depp as an actor. I like Tim Burton as a director. I don't hate on Tim Burton. Although it looks like it might be mildly interesting. It just looks a little bit of a, I don't know, sort of like trying to Addams Family, the whole thing.
Yeah.
So
starting with the makeup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The stinker of the week is One Tree Hill, season 9. Yes, there are nine seasons of that. And that's it. We got the review wrap up this week. We had The Lockout, which we didn't see. So it has to get a preemptive suck, but I really, really want to see it. We have The Three Stooges, which also gets a preemptive suck, and I'm sure we'll continue to honor that tradition. And then, of course, there was Cabin in the Woods. We both said...
Absolutely rocks.
Totally rocks, yes. Next week, we've got Chimpanzee, The Lucky One, and Think Like a Man. Vish, tell us, do you have anywhere you want to... Should we track you down on the internet or anything?
No. This is it. I hope you listen to this and don't throw up, because that's what you want to do at Project X, so save the vomit.
That's right. Save the vomit. That is words of the wise coming from Vish. So on that note, we will bid you a fond farewell. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.